Seminar Estate Planning. Sheridan and Johnson County Estate Planning lawyers are pleased to present a seminar on estate planning. The seminar is free to the public and is applicable to adults of all ages. The seminar will be held Saturday, October 4th, beginning at 9 a.m. at the Hub on Smith. Refreshments will be served during the breaks and lunch will be served at noon. Sponsored by A&B Bank, Bank of Buffalo and Sheridan, Cowboy State Bank, First Federal Bank, First Northern Bank, Sheridan Community Credit Union, the Sheridan Press, and Sheridan Media. Look for the ad in the Country Bounty for details.
This public service message is presented by BHJ Property Management at 101 South Main.
This fall, the Sheridan County Housing Land Trust will have beautiful new construction homes for sale starting at just $231,500. Each single-family home features 3 bedrooms, 2 bathrooms, a garage, and is located in a welcoming, upcoming neighborhood. But at these prices, they'll go fast. Call 307-672-3848, extension 4, or visit SheridanHLT.org to get started.
Are you ready to elevate your event in Sheridan and the surrounding area? Welcome to WyoTix.com, a partnership of Sheridan Media and the Sheridan Press. WyoTix.com isn't just an online ticket sales platform. It's your partner in bringing your event to life. We'll offer a seamless ticketing experience for every occasion, from festivals, concerts, community events. If you have an event that needs ticketing, WyoTix.com will connect you with the attendees. Our commitment is to make your event ticketing a success. With WyoTix.com, you can harness the power of both our platforms to make your event shine. Whether you're a business or an event organizer, let us be your guide in navigating that event ticketing landscape. So unlock the potential of your next event with WyoTix.com. WyoTix.com. Let's make ticketing your next event a huge success. WyoTix.com is a presentation of Sheridan Media and the Sheridan Press.
This is Public Pulse, your information and conversation program brought to you by First Federal Bank and Trust. You can voice your opinion by calling 672-KROE. That's 672-5763. Now, your host for Public Pulse, Floyd Whiting.
Wednesday, September 24th. And from Wyoming's Emerald City, I'm Floyd Whiting, and this is Public Pulse. This morning, I'm joined by University of Wyoming Director of Institutional Communications, Chad Baldwin. Good morning, Chad. Welcome back.
Good morning, Floyd. Thanks to be back. Thanks for having me back.
And now, how are things down there in Laramie?
Well, it's been a little soggy, a little cool the past couple of days, but boy, the sun's out. It's going to be a beautiful weekend, it looks like. So things are great. The semester's off to a great start, and it's a great time to be a cowboy.
And are the leaves changing?
Yeah, up in town, they're just barely starting to, but up in the Snowies, up in the Laramie Range there, definitely, they're beautiful, right? Perfect time to go catch them.
Oh, yeah. Perfect sight to see, standing down there looking up to those mountains. A beautiful range. You talked about this year's semester. UW's fall 2025 enrollment is up 10,813 to 10,819. This is a small increase. And first-time, first-year students also had a very small increase, but an increase. What do these latest enrollment numbers really mean to UW?
Well, they mean that we feel like we've turned a bit of a corner, Floyd. So it's now actually 2 straight semesters where we're up over the previous year. And as you noted, these are not huge increases, but they're increases. And at a time when, you know, when higher education across the country is in a bit of a crisis, both sort of in terms of the confidence of the public and then just that there's a demographic cliff. There just aren't as many high school graduates coming out anymore. This is significant. I mean, there are certainly other universities up. There are many universities that are down. It's really good to be among those that are up. And it signals that we're doing some things right. The strategies we've deployed with enrollment and retention are starting to bear fruit a little bit.
2 questions build off of that. How are you balancing recruitment between Wyoming students, out-of-state students, and even the online learners that are out there?
Well, you know, as far as the online piece goes, I mean, we're up over 8% there this fall, and that really is a national trend where more and more students are getting their degrees online. That's just a market situation. That's what where the demand is. We anticipate there will be continued growth there. Where we have to really bear down and focus on is our residential campus experience, both for residents and non-residents. And we always put our primary focus on the state of Wyoming. That's the state we serve. Those are the students we want to try to get to come here and stay at their state university. And so that always is the priority. We do, though, know that, it's important for us to have non-resident students as well. They make up about 30% of our student body. And people come here and they come to UW and many of them stay in the state, which is a great thing. And so, we do both. We have to do it all, Floyd. And we pick outside of Wyoming. We pick those markets where we've had some success. We feel like there's some opportunity. We have students from all 50 states and I think well over 70 countries that come here. And so we just kind of have to do it all.
And online learning has just come so far. With video and even live streaming, you can be in class but not physically be in class. I can remember the first online class that I took was a creative writing class back in probably 2002, and it was mostly done through message boards. You had to jump on there and check your message board. I think it was three times a week. You had to engage in discussions on the message board. Not that that was, a negative thing. But boy, it took a lot of time. And I think with the advent of all these fantastic technologies where we can remotely kind of view in has been really beneficial and really beneficial to the student themselves getting that type of education, maybe being quite remote for all we know, way out in the boonies by themselves and yet earning college credit. How much of the growth is tied to better retention, making sure that those students that engaged in their first year, maybe even two, stay right there at UW?
Sure. Floyd, before I talk about the retention piece, I do want to agree with what you were talking about with the online delivery, and that is particularly helpful for non-traditional students, so more place-bound students, people who are maybe in their careers and just want to advance. And so that's where it's particularly useful, although there are more and more of our traditional age students doing online things too. But back to the retention thing, that's a big part of it, and we've done a lot of work on that, and we're seeing progress. Floyd, in 2020, the percentage of freshmen who returned for their sophomore year was about 76%. This fall, it's 79.4%. So we're getting very close to that 80% figure, which is kind of the gold standard for a lot of similar schools to us. And it's, we're seeing some real progress there, really focusing on not just getting students here, but helping them be successful. And so and some of that comes back to, we actually have the data that show that students who participate in our Saddle Up orientation program for freshmen, they are retained at over 80%. And so that sort of programming is really helpful. And then just stuff during the year, when a student is showing signs of have real trouble with their grades or other aspects of their life, we have ways to provide some interventions and help get them back. And then, those who had a really rough first semester, to get them to be able to correct things for that second semester so they can continue and get their degrees.
And I think that is so vital. Life creeps up on a lot of people. Something may happen in their personal life that kind of throws them out of whack. You could have a fantastic student that just had one bad semester, and having a team that helps get them back on track, I mean, that's critical. I think everybody has at least one or maybe even two, possibly three bad semesters. Once you get over that hill, you can return to work.
Absolutely. Yep, and that's a real focus for us right now.
Now, how important were the new residence halls and the new dining facility in attracting students, maybe newer students or perhaps even individuals who had decided to try and seek education elsewhere, but they saw that and they're like, you know what? Big things are happening over there. I'm heading back.
You know, we have a real showpiece now, Floyd. And you know, of course, only there's still the North Hall that's done, the dining center, but the South Hall doesn't open until this spring semester. But, you know, now, no long, when students come to visit now, we're not embarrassed to show them the dorms. It's like, well, come check this out, you know. And so it has been very successful, and we're getting real good reviews from our current students. We expect it definitely will help us. It'll help us. You know, it's a competitive field out there, Floyd. I mean, students are applying to like four or five different schools, and then you know, and we have to put our best foot forward, and we got a really great asset now and a real showpiece, like I said, for students to see. And what we're finding actually, Floyd, is that, you know, of course we only have the requirement to live in those residence halls when they're freshmen. We got students wanting to stay in them. So we have more students who are sophomores that are up who want to stay in these things now, which is pretty cool.
Absolutely. And, you know, when you gather the team around, the recruiting and retention team, you know, yes, small increase, but a win is a win. Other universities are suffering losses. University of Wyoming can say, yeah, we're in the black when it comes to this. Does that team feel that they can sustain this enrollment growth, given all these national challenges that you are seeing in higher education?
We're giving it our best shot, Floyd. I mean, as we've looked at the numbers, I've looked at the places, I mean, there just are going to be fewer students out there to recruit. And so everybody's going for a piece of a shrinking pie.
Mm-hmm.
But we feel like our goal of at least maintaining is doable. And we're going to do everything we can and see if we can maybe continue some small growth year to year as well. It's probably not reasonable to expect we're going to boom and have a big explosion of enrollment, but it's, at least maintaining possibly some slow growth is something we're really striving for.
I'm going to switch gears on you, Chad. You know, going into a subject that some people are even a little touchy about. I'm not so much. I kind of want to see innovation in this field move forward. But University of Wyoming, you've received nearly $9 million to advance AI innovation across the Cowboy State. What is this investment going to allow UW to do in AI that you guys couldn't do before?
So, Floyd, you know, AI is affecting really every field,
mm-hmm.
And every part of industry, every aspect. And so those things we know that specific research projects that are funded by this is all collaborative with industry as well, and then matched by the state, is in livestock management. So our ag industry is AI is going to play a big role in that. We all care, of course, in Wyoming about our wildlife. We have incredible researchers doing amazing things with AI to make sure we protect and preserve our prized herds of elk and moose and deer and antelope and all the other species. You know, not even the game species, but things like raptors. We know that the state's making a big move. The nuclear industry is growing in our state, so. Nuclear is one of the things that will research related to that AI is going to have a part in. And then other aspects of the energy field, like hydrogen. We continue to move forward on that as a potential energy source. Also, you know, things that just sort of energy exploration, so oil and gas exploration. AI is going to play a part in all this. So we have multiple colleges that are going to be involved in this, business, education, engineering, law, environment, natural resources, and of course we have our school computing that is kind of the lead agent on that at UW. So every university is working on this, and our AI initiative is right up there, and it's it's supported. This is a collaborative thing with industry, as well as state government. The legislature provided matching funds, and we're up to about close to $9 million now for AI projects at UW.
It's just, it's absolutely incredible. You know, we're entering into a field that you and I read about in science fiction when we were kids. Now, a lot of those were doomsday type scenarios, but I just don't see that. I see AI being able to maybe not sit and have a conversation with you, but this AI can predict, track animal movements, healthcare, things like that. So how is the funding going to be distributed? You got a lot of colleges down there that are probably all looking at these different aspects that AI can be used and advancing technologies and advancing thought on all of these different things. AI can open up new doors. How will the funding be distributed amongst those different colleges to really try to get the best bang for the buck?
So this is a project-specific approach. So you have a researcher or a research team that has a particular project. They say, we've seen some real potential for something here. There's money available, then they have to apply for it, and it's a competitive situation. And so the project-specific competitive approach to make sure that these dollars are used most effectively. And, that's kind of the way academic research functions, even at sort of the national level, where you have to make a compelling case for your project, and then you have to deliver results. And so that's how it's going to happen here.
Mm. That's also going to be kind of the matrix or metrics that the university is going to use to judge whether or not this initiative is successful over time. Sitting down, because when you're blazing into such a new field, it's hard to look at results from the outside of the research and say, oh, well, that is something that I can definitely see. Small gains may be small right now, but huge in the future. It's very difficult to look at that stuff. All right, now I've got to take a quick commercial break. I'm going to have more with our University of Wyoming right after this. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM. Sheridan.
Since 1935, First Federal Bank and Trust has been a cornerstone of Sheridan.
And to celebrate 90 years of community commitment, we're donating $90,000 to 10 nonprofit organizations in Sheridan. Each month through November, we'll honor our legacy of community support by investing in a local nonprofit.
This month, First Federal will award $9,000 to the Child Development Center.
90 years, $90,000. Community commitment at its finest. Visit efirstfederal.bank, member FDIC.
Winner of The Voice and rising national talent, Huntley brings raw, powerful sound and magnetic stage presence to the YO Theater as part of his hometown tour, Saturday, September 27th at 7 p.m.
Oh, Virginia, baby, oh, my pretty lady, yes, I'm gonna make you mine.
With a unique blend of rock, soul, and country influences, Huntley's deeply emotional performances and distinctive sound have captivated fans across the country.
I'm holding on, and I'm not letting go.
Don't miss this opportunity to experience Huntley live in Sheridan. Tickets are available now at the YO box office or online at yotheater.com.
To fire and flame.
You're running a business out of your garage. And your office? That's the back seat of your truck. It's time to upgrade. A Shop-A-Minium is your own commercial condo, heated, insulated, powered up, and ready to work. Perfect for welders, woodworkers, side hustlers, and folks who need more than a corner of the laundry room. Shop-A-Miniums gives you a pro space without the landlord drama. Call Donna Garland at Sheridan Realty Associates and ask about Shop-A-Miniums today.
Big dealerships have big budgets for big advertising, but the truth is that major sponsorships cost big bucks. Here at Prime Rate Motors, we choose to sponsor our local youth and local worthwhile programs, all the while passing that savings on to you, our customer. We are locally owned with the same ownership and management for over 40 years. If we don't have what you need, we'll find it and we'll stand behind it after the sale because we live here, we work here, and we raise our families here. Prime Rate Motors, 2305 Coffeen Avenue.
Ride for a great cause. Old Man G, Buddies RC, and Sheridan Media are coming together Saturday, September 27th for the 13th annual poker run to benefit the Christmas Wish campaign. Ride or drive for only $10 a poker hand. Sign up, start at My Buddy's Place at 10 a.m. Then enjoy the ride. End up back at My Buddy's Place for the final draw. Kickstands are up at noon. Ride or drive for a great cause. The Christmas Wish Poker Run, Saturday, September 27th.
Good morning and welcome back to Public Pulse. I'm your host, Floyd Whiting. This morning, we're speaking with University of Wyoming Director of Institutional Communications, Chad Baldwin. Now, a new University of Wyoming study warns that if cheatgrass and other invasive grasses continue to spread, mule deer in the northeast of Wyoming could lose critical habitat. But if action is taken now, it may turn the tide. Chad, what did UW researchers find out about how much invasive grass coverage actually needs to be there for mule deer to give up on that habitat?
So, Floyd, this is really cool research involving, you know, multiple disciplines, but they've come together and they found that if the invasive grasses are maybe down, you know, maybe 10% or less of a particular area, they're do okay. Once they get over 13% of this sagebrush land with invasive species, the deer start to use them less. When the invasive grasses are more than 20% of the land, then they just basically completely avoid them. So that's some very specific, helpful information that really points to what we can do to try to preserve this really important iconic species of Wyoming. So it is a little bit scary to when you read that, but then you also see the researchers saying, we may have the ability to kind of limit a little bit and keep it under that 10-13% number and try to preserve as much really high quality habitat as we can. But it's going to take work because they concluded that the potential is there for invasive annual grasses to reduce high quality mule deer habitat across northeast Wyoming by 62% in the next 20 years.
Wow.
So it's an urgent situation, but we have the data, we have some techniques, you know, we have things we can do to try to address it, and that's the encouraging part.
And gosh, could you imagine, just going to northeast Wyoming and they're just not having mule deer, that they just abandoned that section of the state? I would be so brokenhearted about that because it's a beautiful species. A lot of individuals love to go out there and hunt. Which invasive species are the greatest concern here in the Cowboy State?
Cheatgrass is the big one, Floyd. There are a few others, but cheatgrass is the one that's the real enemy here, especially northeast Wyoming. It's and other parts of the state too, but especially eastern Wyoming.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the one. You can apply herbicides, you got to allow those native perennials to recover, especially in, say, maybe where there's been burns, and of course that's you guys are very familiar with that issue. And so we got the expertise at UW and the collaborations with other agencies and other, you know, private sector as well. And so it's a real high priority issue, you know, for our state and for our university. And that's a good thing.
Absolutely. It's on everybody's mind. I think at least a little bit, individuals who happen to know what's going on. I mean, I've seen pictures, thanks to our own Sheridan County Weed and Pest District. They've shown me pictures of what happens to a landscape when these things are allowed to come in and kind of take over. It's not a very pretty sight, and that's just visually. You know, as far as affecting the ecosystems, it completely changes the landscape, not just for plants, but for animals too. And here's the evidence. UW went out and found it. Now, is there any strategic on-the-ground remediation methods that UW is really advocating for as of right now? Are we still in the stage where we're looking at that?
So I think there are specific things that can be done. We have our it's called, the acronym is IMAGINE. It's the Institute for Managing Invasive Grasses Invading Natural Ecosystems. That's heck of an acronym. But it's and Dr. Milor, who's right there in Sheridan, is kind of leads this up. And so there are, you know, then of course the local weed and pest districts play a huge role in Wyoming. So they're always looking to hone what are the most effective ways to get after cheatgrass, for example. But there are some techniques, and I'm not able to kind of detail them exactly what herbicides are used or what sorts of things are done, Floyd. But there is that expertise out there, and it's being honed and improved, continually.
Mm-hmm. How can ranchers, landowners, other local communities partner with the university to help this cause?
Yeah. So the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the Natural Resources Conservation Service, has a program that provides the tools and funding and technical support for managing invasive grasses. So then we have our Wyoming Migration Initiative, UW, that collaborates with the U.S. Geological Survey and provides the maps of where the animals hang out, where they migrate, that sort of thing. And so it's there are landowners, if they're interested, the USDA, the NRCS is a good place to start. It's called Working Lands for Wildlife. And then the university, the local weed and pest districts, all are, I think, geared up to help landowners who are interested in trying to address this issue. And of course they have other interests besides just helping wildlife, which is also their livestock. I mean, mm-hmm. Cheatgrass isn't really good for anybody.
Absolutely. Yep. You're losing half your feed for the year because of cheatgrass, it's very costly. So it's good to know that there's a lot of organizations out there that are working on this, folks. My recommendation would also be to call Sheridan County Weed and Pest. Get with them. If you think you've got some of these invasive grasses on your land, give them a call. They'll come out. They'll take a look at it. They'll evaluate the situation, and then your options from there can be discussed. We don't want these things coming in. I know they're really focused on our burn scars right now, but they do want to help out. So... Oh, it sounds like we lost Chad. All right. Well, I thank him for coming on the show. And when we return, we're going to speak with our Sheridan County Library System. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM. Sheridan.
Since 1935, First Federal Bank and Trust has been a cornerstone of Sheridan.
And to celebrate 90 years of community commitment, we're donating $90,000 to 10 nonprofit organizations in Sheridan. Each month through November, we'll honor our legacy of community support by investing in a local nonprofit.
This month, First Federal will award $9,000 to the Child Development Center.
90 years, $90,000. Community commitment at its finest. Visit efirstfederal.bank, member FDIC.
Hey Sheridan, Greg Hansen here with Pit Crew To You. Right now you can shop our extensive inventory 24/7 at pitcrewtoyou.com, where you'll find all your favorite brand tires at the guaranteed lowest prices. Michelin, Goodyear, Pirelli, Continental, Bridgestone, Firestone, Falcon, Cooper, Kenda, Yokohama, Hankook, Toyo, and more. We also carry farm tires, semi-tires, ATV tires, and more. From big to small, we have them all. So when you think tires, think Pit Crew To You. 752-9322.
Believe it or not, it's not too early to begin thinking about the upcoming holiday season, and Moss Holders can help you get your home ready for guests. Right now, all dining room and all bedroom furniture at Moss Holders is on sale. Whether you'd like to add seating to your kitchen or dining room, or update a spare bedroom, now's the ideal time, as nearly every single special order will arrive in time for the holidays. Moss Holders has access to hundreds of dining and bedroom sets, so you can find the one that fits your style best. That's Moss Holders Bedroom and Dining Sale, going on now. Moss Holders. Furniture is our passion.
Doug, I was never good at math, but even I know buying three tires and getting the fourth for a buck, that's pretty crazy.
Bob, that's the easiest math ever. 3 + 1 = 4.
Yeah, but four tires for basically the price of three? That's like magic.
Not magic, just Wearing Chevrolet's tire special. Starting October 1st, buy three, get the fourth for a dollar.
A dollar, that's less than a cup of coffee.
Tires taste better too, Bob.
Don't tell me you tried that.
Buy three, get one for a dollar. Tire sales starts October 1st, but come in now and get your tires ordered. Wearing Chevrolet, 107 East Alger.
Hi, I'm Taylor, front of house manager at Fraggleton's. You know, every day on Main Street brings new faces and familiar friends through our doors, and each one deserves something special. At Fraggleton's, it's not just about the food, it's about the feeling. Our team is here to make sure every bite, every sip, and every moment feels just right. Whether you're celebrating a big day or just enjoying the little things, we'd love to be a part of it. It's not just about the food, it's about the feeling. Book your table now at Fraggleton's.com.
ERA Carroll Realty, Wyoming Corporate Office, and First Federal Bank and Trust ask you to help them fill the bus with food for the food group and the 700 school children assisted with weekend meals. It's easy as shopping at Albertsons while the food group bus is there Saturday, September 27th, and Ridley's on October 4th. Then donating a food item from the food list found at SheridanMedia.com. Cash donations are also welcome. Come on, Sheridan, help fill the bus for the food group, making a difference one kid at a time.
Good morning and welcome back to Public Pulse, proudly brought to you by our friends out there at First Federal Bank and Trust. I'm Floyd Whiting. For our second part this morning, I am joined by Sheridan County Library System Director Amy Long, Community Engagement Manager Cassie Stone, and Youth Services Manager Zola Shockley. Good morning. Welcome back to the show, all of you.
Good morning.
This is a rare treat. I don't really get all three of you at the same time very often.
Yeah, no, rarely.
It's kind of nice.
It
yeah.
is.
We've never been in a room together.
Well, I'm glad it doesn't have to be a Zoom call today. How things been down at the library, Amy?
Lots of fun. Yeah, busy.
And Zola, you had an amazing summer with the kids' reading program.
And now we're having an amazing fall.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
Cassie, when it comes to numbers like that, you know, just staggering. It's amazing to see the kids coming in.
Yes.
Wanting to engage in this reading program. Before I really dive into the questions, I just have a question about how do we maintain these numbers going forward. Have you had those meetings as of yet, sitting down and saying, you know what, how do we retain it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think always on our mind is how do we keep people coming in and look to grow the audience that we haven't reached yet? How do we get our message out there about the things that are going on? And how do we continue to get feedback about what people would like to see in the library?
Cassie, what ideas do you have as the engagement manager?
I've been really focusing on community partnerships lately, and going out and meeting with more of organizations around Sheridan. And really working on the marketing aspect of it, which is, I mean, is more involved today because there's multiple places where people seek information.
Yeah.
And so we send out our e-newsletter now. We post on Facebook. We post on Instagram. We post on the Sheridan Media website. We also have that Sheridan Media community calendar on our webpage now, which I think is really lovely. I don't know if people know this, but it is extremely rare for a community to have one calendar that multiple organizations share. The when I was up working for the Montana Museum of Art and Culture in Missoula, that community had like 5 different mm-hmm. community calendars, and it was my job to post the museum's events on all 5 platforms.
Oh my goodness.
And so that's really great, and we love being able to post on there. And it's also a very visually appealing community mm-hmm. calendar, which is also not always the case.
So
it is kind of just putting information out in as many places as we can, and mm-hmm. then also listening to feedback from people about where they're finding information, where they're most often going for information.
Do you ever walk up to them sometimes and just say, hey, yes. you know, I'm glad you're here. How'd yes. you hear about this
yes,
event?
Yes, all the time.
Yeah.
Because it is difficult to get folks to answer surveys. And again, that has to do with how inundated we are. We're constantly being asked for our feedback every time we get online for anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so it in person, kind of in a casual way, is the best way. And it's people who are actually at the event.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so you want to know where those folks that are engaged are looking for information.
Mm-hmm. You know, unless you're really kind of in the marketing world, you don't realize how things like that, you know, when it comes to the community calendars and things, how much time that can take up in someone's day to ensure that, okay, did I throw it up on this platform? Did I notify this individual? I mean, there are jobs that exist where that's all you do.
Yeah. Actually, my sister works for a place, and she is right now overseeing something like 16 different department social media accounts.
Holy cow.
And I was just like, excuse me, what? How many? And it is. And at the library, it's a group project. You know, Zola and I work on a lot of the marketing campaigns together. And we also, there's another employee who helps us schedule all of that, because we schedule, you can pre-plan stuff so that it posts automatically, so you don't have to invest, you know, time every single day to plan out mm-hmm. the post. It is, yeah, it's a whole thing.
It's a whole thing.
It's a whole thing.
You know, and some folks out there, they might open up that calendar and say, wow, that's pretty easy to do, until you're the one who's got to sit down and make sure that everybody got the word. And you suddenly realize how many people you are trying to reach out to. Now, with the new season comes all the festivals. And last year, the Fulmer held its first Fall Fest. How did it go?
We were so pleasantly surprised, because it was our, you know, the first time you do
the
anything. You're
event.
Like, okay, is anybody going to come to this? And we had so many more people than we thought we were going to. So it definitely taught us a whole bunch of things. So we're excited to have the second event where maybe we're prepared for the amount of people who were there.
Yeah.
But yeah, Cassie and I just spent the entire time going, what? How is this so successful? Like,
it's
shocked.
a good problem to have.
Yes. I mean, it was fantastic. But it was just one of those things that we just kept on being like, what?
How did we get to you, right?
Yeah.
I'll tell you how. Spending all day on those community calendars.
Yeah.
That's how you get them.
Yep. I think we planned for around 150, and we got around 300.
That is absolutely wow.
And part of it was you could not have planned for better weather. It was the most gorgeous fall day. It was absolutely picturesque. And then also, a lot of it has to do with the Downtown Association and mm-hmm. the great work that they do with the shop
trick-or-treating.
The shop trick-or-treating. And we're, you know, talking with them about how we can integrate those things more this year.
Really?
Yeah.
That
yeah.
is fun.
Yeah. Community partnerships, man.
And what a great little event, mm-hmm. you know, because nobody likes to just throw their costume on, go trick-or-treating, and then have to take it off. I want something to do. You know, I'm a grown up and I want something to do. So I think that's fantastic. We get to keep our costumes on, head right over to the Fall Fest, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that same thing going to be taking place this year?
Yes. We will have crafts and games for kids. We'll have, last year we did a pie sale, but this year I think it's more just going to be all fall desserts that patrons bake and bring for us. So
and now my interest is peaked.
Yes.
All right.
And we're going to have a pumpkin decorating contest throughout October, and then we do the judging the the attendees get to judge on their favorite pumpkins and vote for their favorite pumpkins. So that was a really fun thing last year.
Balloon badminton.
Balloon badminton, always, always.
And probably like 3 or 4 times as many balloons because
I got a I got a second inflator and big old balloon bags this year because I am prepared.
Again, it's a great problem to have, but yeah, it creates some hurdles when 300 show up instead of 50. But this year, are we ready for the 300?
We're ready them. We're going to prepare ourselves for like 500, you know? That's what we do now.
I love that as being, you know what, we need to change our standard operating procedure and plan for more people. Amy, how do you feel about this as the director? When you look at a program and you're like, this is the inaugural one, I'm not expecting a whole lot of people. And then half the town shows up with their kids.
Oh, I actually was expecting a whole lot of people.
You had faith.
I didn't necessarily feel like we had to plan all the crafts and everything for 500 because, again, we probably had about 150 to 200 kids and then 100 of the parent, grandparent, helper, the big people with them, right?
Yeah.
So it's a family event. We ended up with enough because... enough to go around of the activities because balloon badminton goes a long way. And the decor and all of the snacks and everything kind of lasted as long as we needed it to go. But I think it was just the fact that I knew that kind of event, spaced where it was, planned at the time that it was going to attract an audience that I don't think we've seen before.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was actually kind of going, I knew this was going to work. And the fact that we're partnering with the Friends of the Library so that there's sort of a fundraising element to it, I think also makes it extra successful because it brings that extra little meaningful bit into what we're doing.
Yeah.
And so I think having all those things combined into one just brings the magic, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, one thing that I really enjoy about these fall fests, the reading programs, things like that, as you said, it brings people into the library.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have a festival in during a fall season, and people suddenly start to kind of put it together. Yes, we talk about it a lot. Not everybody listens to the show. Not everybody reads the stories. They start to learn firsthand that their library is a community center.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just a place full of books. This is a place to go and engage in my community.
Yeah, someone actually asked me the other day, they took out their phone and they said, well, what we need to do is figure out how we compete with the cell phone. And I said, no, we don't. We actually need to remind everybody that what we do is everything the cell phone can't do.
Yeah.
We're not just a place to find information. We're a place to connect to each other. We're a place to connect with the physical world, with our community, with the books that are here, with the physical craft that's here, with the family time that's here, with the story time that's here.
Yeah.
We're everything the phone doesn't do. We don't need to compete with the cell phone. That's what Google has to compete with.
Yeah.
You know, we lost to Google and the cell phone a long time ago. We have moved on. We are the connector of the community. We're the heart of the community. You know, that's what we're here to do, is to provide the community connection, the human connection. The thing that makes the library important to the community is not the things that are in the library. It's the people that are in the library. It's the people that make the magic. Fall Fest wouldn't be Fall Fest without Zola and Cassie and the Friends of the Library and the magic they bring to it. It's not just the stuff we buy. It's, we could put out a bowl of candy and it's just a bowl of candy, you know? The magic is all the people and all of the amazing things they come up with and the services they provide and the way that they take care of the community. And then the people who are in the building, the community that's in the building, and the things that they do for each other. You know, the chess club that meets there every Thursday. You know, it's those things, those people, and the way they connect to each other. That's what the library is.
That's amazing. I was just enthralled with that whole explanation. Because you're right. So many people want to look at the cell phone and say, there's my competition. But it's not.
Mm-mm.
Not at all.
No.
You know, I think about the Fall Fest. I think about the smells of like pies, the looks of pumpkins, and that gentle roar of children in the background having fun.
Yeah.
engaging with each other, story time. You take your baby to story time and you sit there and you are looking at all the classmates and all the parents that you're going to be hanging out with for the next 18 years.
Yep.
You know, you're going to be going to all the football games together. These are your friends for the next 18 years. And you can really create that fantastic connection right then and there. And I think story time is an excellent opportunity to do that. So let's talk about how you choose these crafts. So you guys have got a lot of different activities and a lot of different things happening at Fall Fest. Do you ever look at like the list of these crafts and activities that you can do and say, you know what, we're going to have to make a cut? How do you do that?
I go into my closet of things and I say, what do we have a whole bunch of? How do I turn this into a craft? Yeah, I think last year we did pool noodle monsters because I had an insane amount of pool noodles.
Like a mom getting ready to cook dinner,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, no, just it's opening the fridge. What's in here? What can we turn into a craft? And I mean, luckily, we are all pack rats, so there are always a whole bunch of really cool elements that we have. And then, yeah, we go from there.
Yeah. Do you ever, do you sit down, kind of do the craft yourself and say, you know what, this is going to work?
Yes.
Yeah.
In fact, I have my least crafty colleague do the craft, and if she can do it, then children can do it. That's what I do. I say these are the instructions. Does this make sense to you? Can you do it? Okay. This is going to be good.
Zola, that is amazing. I love that. What a fantastic process. You know, when I was in college, they required me to take what's called technical writing. And I thought, my goodness, this is the most boring class on the face of the planet. I use technical writing more than I use just about anything else.
Yeah.
You know, and all that is literally writing instructions for something. So when you sit down and you do your instructions, one of my first assignments was write a paper on how to make a paper airplane. When you sit down to write your instructions, do you go through each step as you're doing it?
And that's it. I mean, it takes a lot. And
yeah,
as somebody with a very chaotic brain, I'm like, yeah, I just know how to do it. It's fine. Yeah. So having to slow down and actually be like, okay, if somebody has never done this before.
Have you seen that video online of a teacher teaching young kids a lesson on this, and it's how to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Yeah,
have you seen that?
My friend teaches coding, and she uses this.
It's amazing.
Because it's like,
so the kids write like how to make a sandwich, and she follows the directions exactly, and she ends up putting peanut butter on her hand.
Oh yeah,
on like on both, and jelly on the other hand, and putting her hands together.
Like
it is. I encourage everyone to go look it up because it is eye-opening and hilarious.
Yeah.
And the kids' reaction to her following their instruction is beautiful.
Yes.
When is the Fall Fest?
It is October 25th. It's a Saturday.
October 25th. What time are you guys going to start? Because we've got the trick-or-treating happening beforehand, correct?
Yeah, the monster, was it?
Monster Mash.
Yeah, Monster Mash is right before that. That is true.
We are finalizing that time.
Okay. That's no issue there. We'll get that up as soon as possible. Now, one thing I did want to touch on real fast. Cassie, you had an announcement you wanted to make. Folks,
yes.
If you want to do something tonight, you've got something to do tonight, right?
Yes. We are having a local author event tonight at 5:15 at the Fulmer Library in the Inner Circle, and it is local author Demetria Lyons, and the title of the book is Fate's Veil, Shadows, and the Lost Starlight. And we're very excited to have her. And she will be there doing talks and available for, there will be books available for purchase and signing.
Fantastic. Will we have an opportunity for like a Q&A?
I believe so.
Okay. That's one thing that I absolutely love to do. Sit down with artists, writers, creators of any form and really kind of learn the process. Writing is difficult. I think anyone who sat down to write something knows that. And to know someone and to be able to pick their brain who has accomplished this massive goal, I think is really fascinating to learn how they get that done. I've only got a couple minutes left, so I'm going to come back over here to you, Amy, because you have something else inaugural. We've only got 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. The annual report. What is this?
Yeah, we're working on putting together a report of our 24-25 fiscal year and sort of summarizing the highlights of the year as well as our budget outlook for this coming fiscal year, which we're, you know, first quarter of and still trying to get that annual report out. But since it's our first one, I figured I could take a little bit more time on it. But we're hoping to get that out in the next few weeks. So we're going to email it to our newsletter. So if you're not getting our newsletter, go ahead and sign up for that. You can do that through our website. And we also are hoping to print out just a few copies that we can put out at a few places around town. But yeah, we're looking forward to letting people know kind of how great our year was and start doing that every year.
I think that's amazing. What prompted the creation of this annual report?
I'm trying to just let people know what the library does and start reporting out like, hey, this is how the library impacts your community every year. And if we start doing that, I think it helps people to understand not only what we have been doing, but what we're capable of doing and start to really tell our story.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, numbers don't lie. Right. Yeah. That's one thing that I absolutely love and respect. You can hit those high points. Mm-hmm. You can talk about challenges. You can say, look, we're trying to overcome this or whatever. And we do it all as a community.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's always a story behind the numbers. So you tell the stats, but you also have to tell the story.
Absolutely. And usually I'm trying to pull that out of these two over here who have always been fantastic. I want to thank all of you ladies for coming in this morning. This was fantastic having all three of you in the same spot. I always enjoy talking.
Well, we're glad to be here. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. You've been listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM. Share it.
Since 1935, First Federal Bank and Trust has been a cornerstone of Sheridan.
And to celebrate 90 years of community commitment, we're donating $90,000 to 10 nonprofit organizations in Sheridan. Each month through November, we'll honor our legacy of community support by investing in a local nonprofit.
This month, First Federal will award $9,000 to the Child Development Center.
90 years, $90,000. Community commitment at its finest. Visit efirstfederal.bank, member FDIC.
Hi, this is Kayla Carr with Sheridan Honda. Life moves fast, so should your auto service. No long waits, no runaround, just fast, friendly service done right the first time. Don't take our word for it, our customers say it best.
I am always treated to friendly, fast service. Wouldn't go anywhere else.
I was kept updated and had my vehicle back before the promised time.
Exceptional customer service, all makes and models, same day appointments. It's not just a dealership, it's Sheridan Honda.
People say, let's just get rid of livestock and grow crops instead. That's not possible.
We're really missing the bigger picture.
In a world without cows, we may be giving up one of our best tools to help heal the planet.
If we want to truly mitigate climate change, we need animals on the landscape.
How do we pull that carbon out of the atmosphere and put it back into the soil? That's where livestock come in.
Agriculture holds the key to saving our planet.
What really happens if you take all the cows away?
Are we better off in a world without cows?
A World Without Cows. Friday night's feature film at the 8th Annual Wild Film Fest in Sheridan, October 2nd through October 5th. See the full lineup and get your tickets now at wildfilmfest.org.
Do you know what to do if you're stuck on the railroad crossing? Get out of your vehicle. If a train is not approaching, find the blue and white emergency notification system sign on the traffic signs at the crossing. For help, call the number on the sign and give them the crossing number so they know your location and can alert train traffic. Remember, find the blue and white to save your life. For more information, visit OLI.org.
Sponsored by the Wyoming Association of Broadcasters, Wyoming Operation Lifesaver, and this station.
News Talk 930, now on 103.9 FM.
News Talk 930.